Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene podcast.
Don't worry about where I was.
Well, he's more German than you are.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I was
born in Germany.
I was born in Sudan.
So he claims.
Papieren Museum.
Yeah, all nowadays.
My country's in war right now.
Damn.
1-0.
Damn.
You're not in a weird place in this world, man. You lot just have to like pander to everybody.
Kind of have to.
Yeah, man, German.
Yeah, like, you lot screwed up that badly, you know.
The thing is, though, he
changed the course of the world when you think about
it. Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny? Yeah, we're saying, he's a black German.
Yeah.
He would have been in the camps, you know.
Exactly, yeah. They wouldn't have cared.
Do you know what? It's kind of mad because, like, even to this day, yeah, and I remember telling you this back in uni, like, when you hint towards kind of like.
My man.
Yeah.
Like, my man's nuts.
No. If a policeman overhears you, like, he'll come over and he'll be like, yo, what are you man talking about? Like, I just want to know.
Yeah.
And we're like, bro, chill out. We're just doing a history lesson right now.
Do you know what's crazy? To touch on Gaz's points, you lot are fucked up so badly that even now, to this day, this conflict is still your fault.
Yeah.
This is still technically your fault.
Current conflict that's going on.
It's connecting you, man.
The butterfly effect.
Exactly, bro.
But I say your fault. Bro! As Hussa said, I would have been a victim.
Okay? And you should have decided to join them instead.
Nah, that's my grandma's fault, to be fair. Look. After the war, they were doing really good deals in terms of like immigration. You're getting bags of money if you moved in.
That's facts. Like, yo, please, we need tourism.
they literally do. They were like, yo, if you want a work visa, we're going to give you a yard and money, which is as to why their whole... you know, alt-right start rising again, and they were like, we want all these immigrants out. But that's a different conversation for another day.
Yeah.
It's a different conversation for another day.
Yeah, the conversation today is a load of film and TV stuff. So maybe we should focus on that instead.
What
a
segue.
That's why
he's the
host.
Segue.
Maybe we should focus on that instead. We are the Post Credit Scene Podcast, a 14 HQ original, lovers of film, TV and theatre, thanks to Manny. Manny's not here today. And Basola is resting up. She's a hard worker.
Both losers, man. Fuck that, bro. Nah, fuck all that about hard worker. Because if I call in sick, yeah, these men will sit here for 20 minutes cussing me out, yeah. So do you know what we're going to do? We're cussing both out. Manny, fuck you, lazy fuck, okay? Guys, he didn't even get out of bed this morning. He sent us old pictures of Central Lines, okay, to be like,
Sunday,
oh, it's
that,
not working.
That
I've seen that picture before, you know. Google it. Google Central Line packed, and that's the first picture on Google. He's chatting shit. Okay, Basola, she was like, oh, I started my period. Okay, not feeling well. Where's the proof? Okay, like, I just, Manny's at least sending fake photos, right? Do you know what I mean? Okay, fuck them both, right, for not being here. And yeah, this pod is great, and we're going to do great things.
Jason?
I don't know how to follow that one up, I'll be real. But I'm good, I'm here to pod. Shout out to Manny and Biz, I guess.
Fuck them, man.
Shout out to Manny and Biz. Jason, how are you, bro?
Nah, I'm all good. Excited to have the convos we're about to have.
Have the what?
Convos that we're
about to have. Convos. Got you,
bro. You know, a lot of things to talk about, I think. And I know this app will already be out, I think.
No, it won't.
Not this app, the previous app.
Oh, yeah.
Just kind of like one word feelings on Captain America.
Average?
Yeah, mid.
Okay, cool. Noted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, how are you?
I'm feeling good, feeling spicy, feeling all right. Looking forward to this conversation. I think we are really in our podding bag this year, man. This three-man pod thing is kind of suiting, you know what I mean? I'm still not against the 4-5, five end of the year, you know, but I'm not against the four-man pod and stuff, but I like the three-man. It's fun.
Cool.
How are you guys?
Yeah, same old. I'm all right. We move.
How's the love life?
Non-existent still, which is fine. Yeah, non-existent.
Just plowing through things.
Daredevil born again.
Daredevil born again.
Well, we're going to split this episode in kind of like two, but it's going to be one cohesive episode, hopefully. First 20, 30 minutes, we're going to dive into like a preview of Daredevil Born Again. We spoke about it briefly in previous episodes, but we think it deserves its own little segment. It's probably one of Marvel's biggest projects of this year. There's a lot of fanfare from the sort of Netflix series, which is now transitioning to Disney. And then there's a whole load of conversations to be had about that alone, with sort of Disney's hands being on it and people's feelings about that. And the cast are much adored as well from the Netflix show. Second half will be like a wrap-up of Feb, because there's been a lot of good TV shows for sure. And some, you know, there's been a mix and match of films to talk about. So we're going to split this episode into two. It should be a good one. Starting off with our Daredevil preview. It releases on the 4th of March. Well, Born Again, sorry. Releases on the 4th of March in the USA and the 5th of March in the UK. See, come on, kids. Come on, bro. You have to have faith in me, bro. Locked in, bro. And it's a series that I know I'm highly anticipating, but I think I've spoken about this series enough. I'm going to be here to support. But I'm intrigued to know both of you, Huss and Jason, your sort of relationship to either the comic aspects of Daredevil as a character, or the Netflix series, or a mix and match of both, before we dive into like season one, season two, season three of the original. Did you like Daredevil as a character growing up? Care about him? Not? Some interesting comics? Let me know your thoughts.
It was funny, in the comic books, yeah, he was always a confusing character to me, because he was always put in these such unrealistic like situations away from, you know, Hell's Kitchen and that kind of stuff. Like, you know, like he there's a thing, comic book where he fought and beat Spider-Man. Yeah. There's a comic book where he fights Hulk, you know, and it's like, what's really going on here? You know what I mean? Like, he shouldn't be able to fight these dudes, you know? And he's also just he's like, he's also in the, like, he's not a good guy overall. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's not even like an anti-hero either, but he's just, he falls into that unknown gap of like anti-hero and then hero in the middle of that. But, which is like super weird. And I guess the way that Netflix kind of brought that to life was in the Dark Tones, instead of through the character himself. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they kind of more relied on just like, you know, that like the theme of it representing how kind of dark his situation is. But he was actually in general in the Netflix thing was a good guy. Obviously towards the later seasons he gets a bit more ravenous and gruesome and stuff. But yeah, so like my like connection was that I actually thought he was more grounded on TV than in the comic books. Well, yeah.
Do you think it worked?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I think it was a kind of like how we got like X-Men in 2001, sorry, and that, where like it kind of showed the rest of the industry that, oh, if you do something in a certain way, it can work. Whereas like superhero series is at the time we had like Gotham and like stuff like that, right? Do you know what I mean? So they had obviously Smallville, where shows, and most shows were based around the aspect of this wider thing happening. So like obviously a Smallville, him becoming Superman, okay, and then obviously Gotham, you know, eventually, you know, getting to Batman, right? And they spent 7 seasons just doing that story, whereas like in a film, that's like the intro for the first 4 minutes. Do you know what I mean? So like, that's what they like. They based it on. Whereas Daredevil, so good because it was like, well, no, he's here now. He's like who he is now. We're now going to build his world. If anything, it reminded me of looking forward, the Batman. Like the way that Rob Pat, we're getting to know him, sick, but the world around him is being built. Do you know what I mean? And it's the same thing with Daredevil. Like by season 2, 3, okay, like every other character and villain becomes so important to every part of the story. Whereas like you don't get that quite a lot. I'm a sharp now.
No, you're good. I think like my first introduction to him like was probably
my most thirsty after that speech. Yeah.
Fuck is good. No, I'm good. Okay. I'll fuck around.
My first introduction was the I think it was Ben Affleck film.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That was my first ever introduction into Daredevil. And I was a kid, so I was just like, oh, shit. Yeah. Like, That was kind of cool. 2003.
What was the film that had the basketball scene? Was that
That's the one.
Yeah,
the basketball. They're in a playground. You're thinking of
the playground scene.
Him and Electra.
Awful.
I could not tell you what I remember from there. I just remember. I want to say, was Colin.
Yes, Colin Farrell.
Yeah, he had the thing.
That's the only thing I remember. And I was just like, what the fuck is going on? But I didn't hate it or anything like that, right? So when the Netflix show did come about, I was just like, oh, okay.
He's back.
And then I checked out. But like, I kind of like what Huss was saying, like the way they kind of like introduced him and make him a lot more grounded, because I would argue in the Ben Affleck film, and because I haven't read the comics, like he was a little bit unrealistic, but I think at that time anyway superhero films were always a little bit unrealistic.
He's doing backflips on a seesaw.
That's what he was doing. Yeah, it was extra, bro.
See what I mean?
He was doing this in the middle of the day while he's blind. No one like wanted to talk about this. He's blind with the cane in his hand and he's doing backflips.
Ridiculous.
In a playground.
Ridiculous stuff.
Genius,
just,
man.
Like, with
pure genius.
With the Netflix show, the way they kind of like brought all the way down to earth, and like I like probably like Manny, like I love the themes of shows and the ideas of it. And I know you've spoken about it, especially on your personal TikTok, like the aspect of religion. And
oh man, love that shit.
He is, and kind of like the what shapes him, like, and I just think that the way they kind of like depict both kind of like these parallels and whatnot, because he's like, he wants to do good, but in the way he goes about doing good is in such a visceral way and whatnot. And I like, I'll be real, the first time I watched it, I didn't expect much from the Daredevil show, because I think that was the first,
it was their first one,
it was their first one.
Jessica Jones,
I think, was definitely.
No, it wasn't. It was Daredevil.
Was it Daredevil?
Okay,
there you go. Like,
was first,
I didn't expect much. I was like, Marvel, Netflix, like, what's going on? And then watched it, and it's just like, it was such a nice surprise to be introduced to such a character with, and I think the actors involved do a lot for the show as well.
Also, do you know, like, at the time, okay, it felt like I would, obviously you guys can talk on this too, but like, it felt like I was the only one watching it. You know what I mean?
It felt like
I get what you mean.
It felt like,
do you know what I'm saying?
I felt like it didn't get the fanfare, especially when like Luke Cage then come out afterwards and Jessica Jones. A lot of people would talk about those two particular shows.
Yeah, because they were marketed way more Marvelish.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think it's because of the grittiness that the Daredevil has, especially like once they do start introducing the Punisher and whatnot. I
feel it gets kind of crazy.
I guess in the sense of a marketing purposes, I can see why, but it is by far the best show out of that Netflix era.
It's arguably like a top 10 Netflix show in general. Ever.
I would agree.
That's a good shout.
Like, honestly, it is so well done. Do you know what I mean? And we always talk about the importance of like the pacing TV shows. And oh my god, like at times, okay, you feel like it's going a bit too slow, and then you realize, nah,
it's all on
purpose.
By the time you get to see his suit and his helmet,
it feels earned.
Exactly.
By the time you get there, and it's just like, and that's where I would probably push back on you in the sense of like the Smallville aspects, because like in the Daredevil and within the first season, we kind of like see him become who he is. But I guess it's a lot quicker than Smallville, because Smallville, like, he doesn't.
Was it six seasons? Or eight seasons?
I want to say maybe like
Smallville.
Yeah, in Smallville.
How
doesn't become the Superman until way later on.
How many seasons is
it's Smallville?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
10 seasons.
Fucking hell, fam. Yeah. That's what we used to do, you know? On E4 and that.
each season had like bare episodes.
We'd have had like, anything from like 20 odd, no?
You're capping.
20 plus usually.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
That was Flash used to do that.
I remember that was before the writer's strike as well.
Don't do that. Great series.
Oh, it wasn't slander. I was saying they used to give you they used to split it in half and give you like 20 episodes for a season. That's what they used to do.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Greatest show of all time.
Like, like.
We're losing focus, though.
Yeah, we're losing focus. Anyway,
whoa.
But Daredevil, man, so good, so good.
Excited
for the second.
Guys, you're rewatching it right now, innit?
Yes.
How
I've rewatched it too many times. I'm a loser. So let's.
Nah, bro. Listen, don't do that. You know me. I've got a list of you know, watchables. So don't worry about that. But like, favorite season.
Good question. I'm right now through season at the start of season two, but my stance has always been season three is my favorite. I go season three, season one, season two. I know why a lot of people love season two. I bet you're a Punisher guy. Yeah, of course you are. People love.
I was about to say that. But literally,
I understand.
I agree with the season three though, because I feel like it's a lot, very, very personal to like Matt's story.
Facts.
So I agree with that being number one. I can see what's number one. It's just that
action wise,
season two has a lot of action highlights.
Yeah. Bro, the thing of two, yeah, two makes you do this.
Yeah.
Because
it's
like,
not.
It's so fucked up, and like, there's certain parts that you don't even like expect to happen, okay? Because you're going, well, you know, they're not gonna go like that far. Do you know what I mean? But they do.
Which again goes to the casting show. Like, his name is coming out of my head.
Charlie Cox.
No, the Punisher.
John Byrne.
Like his introduction, right? And it's just like Vincent D'Onofrio looks menacing as the
Kingpin,
right?
Wilson Fisk.
Vanessa.
John Bernthal, right? Like
his demeanor
as the Punisher, like the way he's just able to just like scream, and like his introduction, like because I would probably put season two as my favorite as well. Like
I'm not mad.
Oh man, he is.
Why do you like season two?
I think, well, mainly the introduction of the Punisher. I just think the acting performance of John Bernthal is what makes the season for me. The way he's just able to kind of like him being as wrong as he is and still able to convince me, being like, I mean, is he really that wrong? Like,
wait, season three, he's still in it, right?
No,
because he's
Bullseye is the main antagonist in season three.
You're right. Season two, towards the end of it, they start to explore Frank Castle's like his background, right?
Which season? Yeah,
he's a war veteran.
Season two. Okay, cool.
That court scene where he just kind of like just goes off the wall and loses it.
I liked it.
I was just like, do you know what? Like, not that I hear it, but I was just like, it makes so much sense for him, and the fact that John Bonfort was able to portray that so well, like, and
he's also like 5'1 in real life, you know. So for him to,
the thing with the Punisher is, the acting is sort of visceral from an emotional perspective in terms of the violence and the action sequences. Some of that stuff is like the prison scene is incredible.
Sorry, what did you say it was?
5'1".
All right, we're gonna start a new series right here. Well, every time who says something that's completely wrong, he's 5'11".
He's 5'11".
Yes.
Who am I thinking of?
That's crazy.
Do you know how small 5'1" is?
Who am I thinking of?
Who
plays Finn Thanos?
Thanos is
I promise you, without Googling it, I know he's not 5'1".
Yeah,
he's 5'5". But
some of those fight scenes he has, there's the rooftop scene with Daredevil, there's the the prison scene, for example. Yeah. Some of those scenes are incredible.
Oh, the prison escape
is... I think the core of his character is what drives him, which is the loss of his family. That's everything that makes those sort of scenes that he has so much more pertinent.
Because
you know that he's been through a lot of pain. He's a war veteran as well. So you're going to assume there's some PTSD involved with that. So I get why people love season two. I think season two dived into like the philosophical debate in terms of Daredevil almost crossing the line of being the same person as Frank Castle.
But never actually
really crossing that line. But you could argue that he's not far from doing so. And that's the point of Punisher. That's the point Punisher's making, saying you're not different from me. Like, we do the same thing. He can't see that he's wrong, but neither can neither can Matt Murdock.
Yeah, Matt,
which is what makes their rooftop scene when they're debating their philosophies. That's one of the best scenes in the entire show.
So good.
So I get why people love season 2.
No, because yeah, go
on. I was gonna say, isn't there even a scene on the boat where he almost like says that he will cross that line, and John Bernthal's character is almost like, nah, once you cross that line, you're here.
Going back. I mean, those type of kind of like philosophies, because it's like, even if we're just gonna touch on just real quick, like it's the type of philosophy that Batman and Ra's al Ghul always debate as well. Like they're trying to achieve the same greater good, so to speak, but from their different philosophies, like Frank Castle is like, I'm killing these guys, I'm ending their life, I'm getting to the root of the problem. You're just prolonging it, like you're just putting Wilson Fisk in pen. He's gonna come out like in
the same person which he did. Yeah. It's gonna be the same person. Which
yeah,
he
he's
was.
Gonna be the same person which he was. He's gonna come out and do the same thing. Like you're just prolonging, like you're just treating the wound rather than treating the actual symptom and whatnot. And like both characters are right and wrong in their own ways. Like, while I do think, like, because at the end of the day, the Punisher, Frank Castle, is killing people. Like,
well, he's shooting them up, man.
He's doing it brutally as well.
But that's the interesting part about it. It's like Matt is also not just split in terms of vigilante to sort of lawyer, but like his religious beliefs tie into the fact he's also a lawyer. And you know, he has people like Fargy who are telling him, let's do this properly, you don't need to do this, you don't need to be a vigilante, you can be a lawyer, we can go through things properly, you don't need to risk your life and risk us losing you to clean Hell's Kitchen. But I hear Matt Murdock
because, like, again, it goes to the overall kind of like concept, the themes of the show as well. Like, because Matt Murdock realizes, he knows that Foggy is right in the sense of like, look, I don't really need to do this, but like at the same time
he loves it
and he doesn't want to get away from it as well. Like, but even as a whole, like, he knows to some extent, like, even within the justice system, it's so deeply flawed that even when a person who you know is clearly wrong, like, there have been enough times where Wilson Fisk has almost been caught red-handed, but because of the money that he has, because of the connects that he has...
And the influence,
he's able to kind of, like, get around the job.
I mean, season 3 is ridiculous what he's able to get away with, man.
That's what I'm saying.
But, like, see, that's why I think season 3 is obviously Fisk's, like, season, right? Mm. That's where he shows his power aside from his strength. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's like everything else. So, like... You know what, now that we're talking about it, it's tough, you know. Like, as in, like, favorite tough season? It's tough.
See, my problem
is... Start asking you who your favorite kid is.
My problem with season 2... my problem with season 2 is too convoluted. Like, there were too many subplots. So you... And, again, I love season 2. So I'm not, like, taking away.
No, but, like...
You had Wilson Fisk in prison.
Yeah.
You had the Punisher. You had the Stick. You had Elektra. You had the Hand.
Yeah.
And you had
Punisher. You had the Hand as well, yeah.
And you had the Irish. That's, like... That's a lot in one season. And again, I love season 2.
Mm.
That courtroom scene's amazing. The prison escape is amazing. The rooftop conversation is amazing. Yeah. Obviously, Matt starts to, you know, fall in love with Karen Tweger.
Isn't there the infamous, that same season of the hallway where he has his fight and it's all one shot almost?
Yeah, they took it on from season 1 and elevated the action sequence in that.
Because
it goes from the hallway into the staircase.
Yeah, that's the one. The staircase one.
And then they remade that in Echo.
They tried to,
yeah.
Yeah, they tried to. but that's an amazing action sequence. Some of the action sequences in there alone.
MCU.
Don't matter.
Echo.
Speaking of MCU, series, by the way.
Series. Oh, no, I did finish that series. Oh, my God.
Absolutely. Yeah. Josh Brolin is a 5'10 and a half.
Okay.
See, point proven.
Just on season 3, though, before we maybe... Anyway, season 3, I love. Bullseye. Again, you can see... The sort of similarities in the two characters in Bullseye and Daredevil, and their difficult upbringings as children, which have shaped them as a person. You can see, and every season gave you like backstory, which felt earned for the characters. Like when we found out why Wilson Fisk became who he was through his father and his father abusing his mother. We found that the Punisher's obviously lost his family, his wife, his children, and obviously Poindexter as a child. We get to see why he became who he was as well. I think he unalived somebody like throwing a baseball at someone because he was so talented.
His coach, I believe.
Yeah, because he wouldn't let him pitch or something, right? Incredible. Like, I love season 3, but season 3 still also delved into Matt's religious struggles. Obviously, Sister Maggie, his mom, Father Lantern, the religious aspects of the series. Man, that's some of the best TV I've seen.
Yeah,
it's so good. How are you guys feeling about Born Again before we wrap up this conversation?
Do you know, like, I think it's going to be like a weird one. because I know we've spoken about like a few times that we obviously look forward to it because of the credit of the Netflix series, but Disney have obviously came out and the showrunners have said that this is going to be different. It's going to have the same, you know, gravitas, but they believe that the first part, it was still, you know, missing a lot. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing the fuck out of this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they obviously want to make it a lot better, and they think it's way better. The one thing that we haven't like spoken about is the transition. We're acting like we ain't seen him since Netflix, right? But we've seen him, what, 4 times now, right? We've seen him obviously Spider-Man, and we find out then that he's now his new job, but he's now a lawyer for the Supernatural,
yeah.
Right? So that's a thing that was never really explored in the Netflix series. Then obviously we see him in She-Hulk, you know, smashes her. Standard stuff.
Sex with a green woman, why not?
Yep, you get me? And then we see him in...
I feel like you could have transitioned a bit with like whole smash.
Ah, damn it, wait, hold on. Then we see him in She-Hulk. Wait, hold on.
Oh, so you wanted to do your sheets. Yeah,
and then we see him in She-Hulk. You know, he Hulk smashed her.
Yeah, he doesn't have the same ring.
Yeah, no anymore. It took too long to get there.
But and then we see him in fucking Echo, right? He didn't like smash anyone there, right?
No, he didn't.
Oh, fucking hell, God forbid.
Who is it? Echo's Haley. Steinfeld, right?
No, that's Hawkeye. No.
That's Hawkeye. I'm thinking. I was going to say, why he missed that opportunity there?
Okay, let's move on.
But it's like, we don't even know where he's really at this point, man. Okay, do you know what I'm saying? Like, what is his motive? Because his motive in Echo was obviously Fisk, right? And then his motive in She-Hulk was being a lawyer. And then his motive in Spider-Man was he's just a really cool cameo. So... Like I don't know. Like I'm interested in seeing how the MCU transition that. I hope they don't convolute it. Just give us a really simple reason as to why he is where he's at now. That's perfectly fine. I'm happy with that. I don't need you to be like he got blipped out 5 years ago and came through. Don't need any of that.
Exposition to explain things to tie into other.
Exactly. Just be like, yo, man was there when it all happened. Bless. Safe. And then, like you said, I think you mentioned to me, guys, if they do this as like how it was done on Netflix of like, you know, I think it's more than 8 eps, right?
I think this is... Oh. It was originally like 18 episodes. It got whittled down to like 8 to 10.
8?
I wish it was 18.
I
take your time. Build it up. Time
for sure. But like even the Netflix series, they only had like
13
episodes and stuff like that. Like to
give 8 to 10's dead.
I mean, if it's
8 to 10's dead.
Do you know what? Whittle it down for sure. I don't know, like, cause the worrying thing will always be for me the showrunner's quote.
Yep. Dario Scardapane is the showrunner.
Yeah, like his quote's about kind of like the he doesn't want to have two people in a room talking. And I don't know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword thing because it's like, okay, cool, we're going to get action. And like we all love action. So it's just like, okay, cool. And
we need substance.
We need substance, exactly. Like, I think the action will actually be quite good because Echo, a show that I didn't like, the fight scene that we did get with Daredevil,
it was dope. But Echo was, again, it was the pacing thing, right? It was so, everything was done so quickly. And it was just like it was like
quickly and unnecessarily.
So unnecessarily. So I hope the whole 8 to 10 eps thing doesn't mean that they're gonna rush a bunch of content into it and then hope for the best. Like I do still think like the beauty of Daredevil was that, you know, was that they could have like, bro, like we speak about season 2 having like 7 different subplots, right? But like somehow, some way, they were still able to kind of like share those subplots in season 1 and 3 to kind of spread out a little bit. But obviously, the main bulk of it was obviously in
there was some crossover from season 2 to season 3.
So it makes
sense.
So that works. But yes,
it's going to be 9 episodes.
Okay,
9 episodes.
Literally,
it's a weird number.
It was cut down from 18 to 9.
Yeah, that was after the whole restructure that they had. So.
Yeah. No, I'm optimistic. I always want to be optimistic because we all love, like, the MCU to an extent. Anyway.
You guys don't think it's going to be better than the Netflix thing, right?
No. I don't know. Not in good conscience. If it does turn out to be a lot better.
I've won.
Yeah, exactly.
I've won. If
like, we've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, there's actually
because we can always still go back to those three seasons.
I can rewatch that time again, man.
Exactly. Yeah, it's fucked.
But if it does turn out that season 4.
They've already started shooting season 2, you know?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, they started shooting season 2 already.
Do you think Fisk has lost a bit of his credibility until he came back into Echo? Because when he was in Hawkeye, okay, and he wore the fucking Hawaiian top, and I get it, it's comic book accurate, you know, when he's not being Kingpin, he's doing up.
We don't talk about Hawkeye.
Yeah,
talk about Wilson Fisk in Hawkeye.
Yeah, and he was horrible in that, bro. He got smoked in like a half an episode, yeah. And then I was just like, okay, wait a minute. You had Daredevil take 3 seasons, bro, years to pattern this brother, and then it took this guy what 60 like fucking 30 minutes. Like it just felt so wasted. And then like, he comes back in Echo, and the fact that the company that was doing what they were doing in that thing in that town, I think it was the city in Oklahoma. I love that because it showed like his power and it still didn't give me like a terrified fear of him.
I feel like whereas classifying him a little bit, which is
Steven, how do you Steven, how, exactly? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll make him in the trailer. I was male.
No, great. He was fucking bro. He was fantastic, bro. The white painting and everything. His voice. It was great. But again, it's just that we can't ignore
what's already gone.
Yeah. So it's like how
from Hawaiian to Mayor Wilson Fisk.
Facts and to the fact of like Mayor Wilson Fisk that we're fearing. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, bro, like Murdoch, there was a point where he was like terrified, bro, just of like the aspect of like facing him. Do you know what I'm saying?
Because he is terrifying. And I think, because like Kingpin, especially because Kingpin more often shows up within the Spider-Man series, as far as I'm aware. Like, he's like a villain, I guess, throughout the.
He's like, I would say he's like the MCU's like Lex Luthor.
Yeah, he's just like there in every season.
He's just involved, fam.
And like for me, especially like within the cartoon series, like I always felt of him a little bit more of a gag character in the sense.
Facts. He gets beaten very quickly. But then every now and again, he would do something that makes you go, oh wait.
Okay, I can see why he's Kingpin.
But yeah,
in the Daredevil, the way he was able to establish himself, and that goes all the credit.
Because you know what, they didn't show him straight away.
They didn't.
He was elusive for like 6 to 7 episodes.
Bro, like.
Don't speak about him. Don't say his name.
Exactly. The way they were able to build him up, right? And then, like, what Hawkeye and Echo done, they kind of like brought him back to this whole cartoonish vibe.
Facts.
Like, he gets beaten.
It was too playful.
Too easy.
Yeah.
Don't break what isn't. That doesn't need fit.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like.
Or change whatever.
I just. Yeah, no.
Bro, I'm not gonna go deeper, yeah. Like, deeper. If it had the same storyline in Hawkeye and the same storyline in Echo. But just didn't show him at all. Just have his like henchmen or his people or whatever do it would have been way more powerful. Because it would have shown us that his influence is spreading across everywhere. Do you know what I'm saying?
Still spreading, and it's just like it still gives the characters involved like even if you don't need to have the Kingpin there. You can just have like maybe like a mid-level henchman, someone that is realistic for them to be, because you can't watch a Netflix show and see how much trouble Kingpin was given Daredevil and then think, yeah, Hawkeye's gonna pattern him with a punch.
Not even just Hawkeye, Kate Bishop as well.
Kate Bishop. Yeah, bro.
Patterning him in one move.
The thing is, okay,
that's Katie though.
Of course, obviously.
Yeah. You sicko, man. Yeah. Put it away.
But like,
very own milkman.
But like, I like, obviously, like, it's a weird position to have, okay, obviously, because we're talking about like the MCU now, because that's where we are now. Yeah. Okay, and it's like, I do wish, okay, that they just stayed away from Matt and stuff and actually put him into a different universe and put the whole thing in a different universe. And then what I think that Disney Marvel should do is focus on another Earth and another set of heroes. Do you know what I'm saying? So even if you bring back like Iron Man and whatever, just do it, recast them completely, but on another Earth. So then that Earth still exists. And then in 5 years' time, we can you know, like explore that. Now, Daredevil, X-Men, blah, blah, all these things that they brought back, right? I wish that it was on that other Earth. So then now that we're going into it, we're almost stepping into their world. Whereas obviously now it feels like they're coming out of their world and they're stepping into
the MCU.
The MCU, right? Do you know what I'm saying?
Do you know what? You bring up a good point. I think it does come down to the whole market, like not even just marketing, like the ins and outs of.
Well, yeah, it was trying to keep the hype up post Endgame, right?
Endgame, exactly. So I think because DC, what they've done is quite well, like in the sense of like, okay, we've got all of these IPs, but we're going to stamp on it and not intertwine them. Like the Batman is going to stay in its own universe, and you've got James Gunn's Superman, and something else was coming out as well under James Gunn.
The Commanders or Commanders?
Creature Commanders has already
Creature
come
Commanders,
out.
Yeah. But,
Creature Commanders.
Peacemaker.
Like they're all its own thing.
Supergirl.
So to speak. And then that's the one. And then they don't have, and they don't need to, because like
I think it will like eventually though.
I think they should.
I'm sorry, but like
it's okay to.
Yeah, but like my point is that Daredevil. Okay, like I do wish that what we get isn't diluted by the MCU or by what's been happening within the MCU. Like obviously, like the problem is okay is that if like the actions of Infinity War was so great, like you can't ignore it. Do you know what I'm saying? So like series is like obviously WandaVision, Loki, even the Marvels, okay, they're
Winter Soldier enough.
Yeah, they're addressing the blip, right? They're addressing that happens, and it's you can't ignore it, because if you do, it's just stupid, okay?
Yeah,
well,
the show has the directors, one of the directors, Aaron Moorhead, was on Loki. He's on Daredevil Born Again. And I think they got the Punisher showrunner or show creator to come on to Daredevil Born Again, which will be interesting to see whether some of those sort of thematic aspects of what you just discussed transition.
Do you know what I think is one of the most underrated villains in that whole like Defender series, with obviously Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, that was it, right?
Well, I guess Stick.
Underrated.
No? Oh, Stick is my guy, man.
Yeah.
Who's Stick?
He's mentor.
Oh, Stick. Oh, yeah. Out of all of those, I think the only person that kind of like goes up like a Fisk was David Tennant's character in
he wasn't in the Defenders though, was he?
No, but in Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones. He was in Jessica Jones, yeah.
Yeah, he was.
His power, by the way, crazy. Is crazy. Absolutely. Tell me, you've seen it.
I haven't seen Jessica Jones. No.
Bro, watch Jessica Jones. Out of like the rest of them, it is pretty good, yeah. Because the villain, David Tennant, puts on a performance of a lifetime, bro. Yeah.
Scary guy, man. I thought he was gonna murk me.
Bro, I thought he was gonna murk me. So scary, bro. His whole power is that like he can see you and everything, just like he can control you. Like basically you stop and then he can make you do whatever. It's like that curse in Harry Potter where
he can speak to you and tell you whatever you want to do.
Bro, as in like and bro, they elude to like the R word. Do you know what I'm saying? So like they allude to the fact that he's got in people's yards, okay, and just made them do whatever. And that Jessica Jones, okay, she used to date him or something like that, and that she's convinced, okay, obviously like they try not to hit it too on the freaking nose, yeah, that for years or for the time that towards the end when she was like trying to leave, he didn't let her leave.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It is absolutely terrifying. And there's like a dinner scene, right, where they all sat around the table, and then he's making them have a dinner with this random family. And honestly, so terrifying. Yes.
Season two though is garbage.
Oh yeah, no, season two absolutely
don't
trash.
Don't watch that one.
I don't think I've watched season two. That's
don't do.
Is that when she?
He's not even in it. Don't watch it.
Is that when she smashes a Luke Cage?
That was in Luke Cage.
Luke Cage, yeah, crazy.
He was a dog though.
He was a dog. Well, Matt Murdock's a dog though. Chill.
Yeah, he was on Claire. He was on Karen.
Karen, Elektra.
I bet you like Elektra, don't you?
Not really.
Okay. Before we wrap up, let's do two things. The first one, task your favorite scene from the original series. I can list them out for you if you need a bit of help.
But yes, yeah. Please.
You got, for example, the rooftop scene, Daredevil and Punisher. You got prison escape scene for... Not prison escape, you got Punisher's prison scene. You got
The prison scene the one where everyone's in like all white and then like he just punches through everyone, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's the one where Matt Murdock goes...
That's season three.
Is that season three?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he beats Wilson Fisk and he goes, I beat you, the city beat you.
Other way around, you mean? Wilson Fisk beats him.
Yeah.
In that scene, the Wilson Fisk is like, it's like slamming him against the...
Are you talking about the prison scene when Matt comes in and then has to escape?
No. Okay. I might be getting my scenes confused. No, it's the one where, like, so... surely Daredevil beats Wilson Fisk and he goes, I beat...
That's the final scene of season three.
Yeah.
That's not a prison scene.
That's not what I'm talking about. That's when he's in his apartment.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm talking about.
That's your favorite, yeah?
Yeah, that's my favorite scene. Yeah. Like, powerful.
I think he took on Bullseye and Kingpin in that scene as well. Yeah.
I can't find the scene, yeah, but it's the scene where Fisk, he's at the dinner table, whatever his like routine gets like broken up because season three, we're constantly shown.
Is our favorite.
Season three, okay, like we're constantly showing, you know, he's like the same breakfast, he does a little thing and blah blah blah, you know what I'm saying, and yeah. And then there was a scene where I think he gets arrested and they all come in like being crazy, but he's just like still doing his own thing, right? And then obviously he starts going mad. That scene for me is outstanding, bro, because they set it up for like four like eps, like, you know, price that. It's like, yo, that's freaking sick. And then obviously you see how like tapped his wife is. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, Vanessa, yeah. She gets ingrained by season three.
Yeah. But that scene made me clock that.
That's his die.
His household like environment was tapped. Mm. And she was like this, like, yeah, come, I'll do whatever you want. Like, we can ride or die this thing. Yeah. So I would say like, yeah, the break of his routine. I mean, that's what makes me super excited about the trailer. That you know, we're assuming that it's obviously blood on the painting. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, that's breaking his like routine. Why he's the symbolism of that. So yeah, I'm super excited.
Sick. Mine's easy. The rooftop Punisher, Daredevil.
Dope.
But there's the two hallways, Daredevil scenes. Of
course. Yeah. Course.
Really good scenes in there. And I liked the Bullseye office fight scene with Daredevil as well, because it showcased their different skills. Bullseye, long range, throwing things. Daredevil, close range. Amazing. And the final one, if you had to predict a cameo from the MCU in this, which is probably going to happen, who do you think is going to appear in Daredevil Born Again?
I think it will be one of the Thunderbolts.
Thunderbolts?
Yeah.
Thunderbolts?
Generally.
Oh, you think Defenders are coming back?
I don't think so.
Defenders are coming back.
I think we'll get like a Yelena.
Okay.
Type vibe.
I don't know who.
I think that's the more like realistic one.
What's wrong with you, man?
Yeah, I'm off.
I feel like that's the more like one, but like I guess like the hopeful one is. Or not hopeful, but like the more like MCU one, yeah, would be at the end getting Tom Holland.
He's too big time, man.
Yeah, he's too big.
No, but deeper though, they're connected though heavily in
but
the comic books. Bro, if Hell's
that
Kitchen.
That broke the internet.
If that did happen.
I think it might happen.
Because, Charlie Cox gave him a cameo, you know?
Yeah. Also.
You owe me a favor, bro. Yeah.
Also, like I hope if it does happen, I hope it doesn't happen at the end. I hope it happens, like, in the middle, ever he dips. You know what I'm saying?
Make it natural.
Yeah. Don't make it look like oh my God, look at this bus. No. Like.
Don't give us the classic Marvel post-credit scene type shit.
Yeah. The other thing that I heard was Ned.
I was going to say, though.
Like, Spider-Man's that bestie.
Technically, Daredevil doesn't know that he's Spider-Man.
No, he does.
He does.
Because everything's reset, no?
Oh, yeah, at the end of...
No one knows.
Right.
There is actually no more connection. Other than, I guess, Tom recognising that Daredevil was his lawyer.
So it's still connection? Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll go with that. You're on the defenders vibe.
I'm on the defenders. I think one of the defenders is going to show up. And
Jessica Jones said she'd like to come back, didn't she?
She did.
I'm hoping. I mean, I don't really care which one, apart from Iron Fist.
Like, if it was Iron Fist, I'd fuck it off. Yeah, didn't it? Yeah.
I actually do care.
If I saw someone say, "How can I see if this guy get pammed in Game of Thrones?" to 2 feet of being called the Iron Fist. I was like, "Yo, that's so bad, you know." But,
right, let's move on.
But yeah,
any fight closing thoughts before we move on?
No.
Film and TV for Feb. We'll do a quick sort of debrief, maybe spend for 5 minutes on each project. Of course, you watched September 5, the premiere.
Yes.
Shout out to Substance and Paramount for the invite.
Substance Global, yeah. Love y'all.
Quick thoughts on the film premise. What did you think?
Good film. I thought it was for the film and for the concept. Kids, could you get up the director's name, please?
Yep.
Yeah, like for the film and the concept, I thought it was brilliant. I said to Gaz and the team at the time that it reminded me of Air, with
Ben Affleck
and so September 5th is about the 1972 Munich disaster, which obviously happened at the Munich Olympics, where 11 Israeli athletes were held hostage by some, I guess, terrorists. Okay, you know, per se.
I don't know where you. Okay.
Oh no, because the whole point of like the film was to kind of stay away from the you know politics of it
that
and like
insane.
But bro,
you have to hear him out first.
I promise you it's one of the best conceptual films that I've watched in a long time, okay? And they actually did stay away from the politics as much as they could, because obviously it's still a very political issue. The way we did it, okay, was that they showed it from the perspective of the media, right? Instead of hiring actors to recreate the athletes and the scenes, they used all real footage, because at the time during 1972, a big thing was that it was the first time that the world was re-accepting Germany post World War II in an international event.
Yeah.
Publicly, so Germany will try and make a massive effort into the safeguarding of people there and that stuff. Mm-hmm. Ironically, by doing that, they dropped the amount of like security that was there, because they didn't want to show force, like, you know, people with like guns and blah blah, you know what I'm saying, PTSD, you know, trauma, blah blah blah. Obviously that means that the fanfare and like the noise around the Israelis, okay, was a massive thing, because, you know, they're coming back to a country that obviously tormented them for years. So, you know, that's what it was about. But another massively significant thing was that it was the first ever live internationally broadcasted event ever. Right. So, So, and only a few companies had the tech to actually live. Yeah. And one of them was CBS, right? It was ABC, sorry. It was ABC. So ABC were able to basically come down from the US and then fight with the other broadcasters there, the German ones, okay, into showing what goes live and, you know, et cetera. Obviously, by these times, okay, there's no TV laws, you know, to say what you can and can't show on TV. It was more just kind of like the ratings were the biggest thing. So this whole film is from the perspective of the media control room, of when they found out that the hostages were taken hostage, and that should we cover it or not. Do you know what I'm saying? So they then, you know, end up, you know, getting people on buildings and stuff, filming it, you know what I'm saying, and getting these famous shots, which it today's time you're never getting, because obviously of TV regulations now, right? And then all the footage that you see that involves the hostages, all the footage that you see that involves the terrorists, all the footage that you see that involves the host, all the audio that you hear that involves the reporters, original. So the actors in the control room are the only actors, right? So when they're talking to the host in the main room to update him, they're using real footage. So they're having to act as to what he thinks he's gonna hear. Do you know what I mean? It's freaking genius. Like, it's actually genius. And what I love about it, okay, was that the only time they delved into it politically was the personal preferences of the people in that room, right? So there was a German girl who was just determined to shift the concept that all Germans are bad, yeah. Right? I said to guys, okay, I was like, the perception of her is something that I didn't even consider, right? The fact that she's like, we were prisoners too in our own country.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we didn't actually believe in what he was doing. Do you know what I mean? Okay. But like, we were here. And because I have an accent now, okay, or because I'm from here, the perception is that I was part of that regime.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, like, I'm not part of that regime. Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, there was obviously that. There was the whole Palestinians. Obviously, there, you know, there's like a whole history behind why that happened. You know, that they were trying to free 200,
which is mentioned as well.
Yeah, yeah, which is rightfully mentioned. 200 Palestinian people that were allegedly wrongfully imprisoned in Israel, right? So it's like, and even the broadcaster says, you know, they say, what should we call them? And the broadcaster goes, I don't think we should use the word terrorist because it's not been used publicly so strongly yet, because obviously we just came out of like two wars.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then it was the broadcasters that made the choice to use that word. And that's now like universally known as the moment that was like a commercially put in word, you know? So, okay. Which arguably in 1972, okay, started the, you know, Arab regime of, you know, of you know, of racism, you know, like the stereotyping of it, and all of that. The director
is Tim Felbaum. I was also gonna say one of the producers is also Sean Penn.
Oh wow, okay, he. Was on stage in the premiere, and his enthusiasm for the film was just breathtaking. You know what I mean? And he was so excited to like talk about the film. He was so excited to kind of share the film. He like, you know, he does mention that they filmed this film like a long time ago. And what we said was that the timing of the release is so horrible and so kind of like suspicious to people that, you know, like us that have been, you know, supporters of a certain cause and that kind of stuff. So it's tough. It is really, really tough to like sit there and watch that and have people that are not so smart, you know, be in that room and go, see, I knew they were always like that, da, da, da. And it's like, you're an idiot, do you know? So whereas like smart people or just normal mannered people can like leave that and take it for what it is, a conceptual film, you know, based on an event that happened, do you know what I'm saying? Okay, which can be done about anything. So he talks about how they struggled to like release the film, obviously during like COVID and you know different times or blah, and it's like there's never gonna be like a good time to drop this film. But he then said to people, this is not based around the politics, okay, and it's actually based around a documentary that he watched called One Night in September, or One Day in and he said, guys, it's free, it's on YouTube, go watch it if you want to hear like the research and the actual theories and everything around that day. Do not take this film as gospel. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's great. But obviously the negative thing is that he can't go to 2,000 cinemas across the world and do that same speech.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like the influence of this film, it's
propaganda almost.
Yeah, yeah. It's a double-edged sword, right? It's a great film, and it really is a great film. Like I genuinely enjoyed it. But is it something that needed to come out now?
Yeah.
Probably not. You know, but sorry. I know
I think, do you know what? Like, especially like, I think for all of us, probably can say like, you know, we love films that, you know, let us take away things from it and then kind of like talk it as deeply as you have. Like, you were fucking pudding, by the way. I do want to mention that.
No, legit.
My boy. I genuinely was like amazed in like how you brought it back, because I was kind of like just stuck on my head. It's like, how can you make something that is so political not political? But then as you went on, I was just like, okay, cool. I actually see where you're coming from. So
it's mad. It's
sounds like a powerful
it's,
film.
It's that, honestly, like such a good watch, but such a tough watch, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. Got nothing to really add, you know. You kind of fucking stole the show there. Yeah.
Sorry, man.
You did the game.
Yeah, he was in his
bro,
fucking bag.
Bro, you know is, bro? Like, after that day, bro, called my sister. We had a whole chat about it, man, for like an hour and a half, bro. Do you know what I'm saying? Sad, and man. She was breaking down to me, like, why she thinks it is like propaganda. And when I was saying to her, I was there, man. She was like, to be like, that's a mouth. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't matter. Like there's so many films that she was like, you know, she was like saying to me, how many films do you know that they spent, you know, 40, you know, 50 mil on that you've never seen, because they haven't dropped it for another reason. Like, oh, the star, you know, is
did so and so,
and it's like, all right, cool. Say so she, you know, she's like, people are dying, Hus. People are literally dying, and so why should this be? Why should this be a thing? What? Just because some of these creative vision? And I was like, wow, I absolutely get it.
I can't remember, but I remember I saw this quote and it was an explanation about how everything that we do, everything we do is political, like everything.
Of course, yeah. Everything, like especially art, like especially.
Yeah. Especially
no,
art.
No matter how you try, you stay away from it. It's all technically political.
Yeah. It's tough.
I will just add, Peter Sarsgaard is incredible in the film. He's a really good actor, and I'm a huge fan. And I just really like the intricacies of the way the film delved into like a media control room in that particular era, alongside the way it was shot, which was beautiful. But the intricacies of making a show happen and how they had to sort of transmit certain aspects of material to other aspects of the Olympic Village to make the live show happen was really, really intricate, really, really well done. We all had, I think some people in the theatre would have had sort of dubious feelings about the film due to whatever stance you have. I definitely felt that, but I still took away a lot from the film itself. But again, I have the luxury of being someone that can critically break something down without necessarily it affecting my political stance or my
The fact that's a luxury to you is mad, because it should be the norm to everybody, but obviously it's not. So.
Yeah.
We'll move on. Jason, is there anything you want to touch upon? I know you've watched a few things. Which one do you want to go into first?
Do you know what? I think, because I'll probably have less to say about it for now, so I think I'll go into Friendly Neighbourhood Spider-Man first.
Yeah, let's go.
Friendly Neighbourhood Spider-Man is...
Don't spoil it for me.
It's hard to spoil, to be fair.
It's hard to spoil, because it's not like the characters that are involved. Like, I guess it's more the plot, and I don't think the plot is anything to write home about. Not to say that it's bad or anything like that, but Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man is the new animated show from Disney Plus. I think it's from the same animation studio that was doing the What If series.
Dope.
You might have to fact check me on that one. I just think it is, but...
I think you have to... I don't know if it is, you know? Fact check it for us anyway.
Yeah, do fact check it for us, please. But Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, is just like any other Spider-Man story. Like, I think with Spider-Man, the character being as iconic as he is, there isn't much room for him to kind of, like, be one way. But what I found really... were in the show, that is why they didn't do much with Peter Parker, the character. They have done a lot more with the other characters, specifically the Osborns, you know, turning them into black people.
Yeah, cool.
No. Okay, that was a
you sounded like you didn't want to say it.
That was a weirdly constructed sentence, because I was just like, I'm just kind of like talking as I'm thinking at the same time. And I think it's just...
You're right.
Same studio?
Yeah, so Marvel Studios Animation has released 4 projects. What If, X-Men 97, and now Your Friendly.
There you go. Yeah, so I think...
And I am Groot.
fair enough. But, like, one thing... Yeah, so just quickly on the animation again, like, the talent is there for sure. Like, the 3 shows that you just mentioned, What If, X-Men 97, and now Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, I think, from a visual aspect, is so beautiful.
I fucking love it. Fuck, and you. I don't understand why people are hating on it. It's actually really jarring me.
I think one thing that...
Yeah, go on.
For me, anyway, like, where I can see the... especially within the action scenes, especially when Spider-Man is doing, like, flips and stuff like that, I can see, like, and this, I guess, if that's the word for it, like, the frame rates can get a little bit...
Well, it's not... the FPS is not good, yeah?
That's not what I'm trying to say. But, like, I can see why it can be jarring to kind of, like nerds, if that makes sense. Because it can... look a little bit choppy, but I don't think it's bad enough for us to write home about. I still think it's a very beautiful visual watch, especially like within the transitions where they do it.
Comic panels.
Comic
my
panels.
God, my
it,
God.
It really reminded me of the Ultimate Spider-Man PS2 game. Mm. And I was like, that's one of the reasons why I liked it as much as well anyway. But the animation is beautiful for the most part. But I think what they do as well with the characters, as I was saying, like turning kind of like Norman and Harry into black characters, and kind of like going literally what we just said 2 minutes before, like every single piece of art is political. Like having... I don't know what the word is, like having black people playing like oligarchs or like rich people as almost kind of like the villains. Not to say that, you know, black people are villains or anything like that, but like just giving us a diverse range.
There might be.
Of, yeah, exactly. Like we are just like everybody else, if that makes sense. Like we have such a plethora and diverse kind of like cast of black people. We can be anyone, but it's the fact that we don't get represented as often as anyone.
Anyone, yeah.
And I think that is... No, yeah, that's what I think is kind of like good to see. And if anything, like for Norman anyway, especially within the old 90s cartoon series, he always had waves. So it makes absolute sense that they had to make him a black
man. Like Coleman Domingo.
Exactly. Like,
his voice acting is really good in this.
Voice acting is so, so good.
Norman's black.
Yeah,
literally. Wake up, man.
My nigga, man.
Common Domingo is voicing him.
Common Domingo.
No. Yes, I thought you were talking about something somewhat completely different.
No.
The Osbournes.
Yeah, the Osbournes.
Sick.
No, but I think that is so good. And
well, the show creator is actually a black man, and I think he isn't afraid in the series, as we've seen, to like dive into like those sort of issues that affect black people in the real world and put them into the animated series, which I really enjoyed. Because then that's, I guess, the refreshing aspects of the series. It's just telling a story that we might have seen before, but from a different perspective of different characters and different people with different experiences. That's what's been the strength of your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man so far, at least.
Yeah, so far at least. And like you... Like, just to jump off that, like, you brought up a point of kind of like showing different perspectives, especially within, I'm forgetting his name, the football quarterback.
Oh, yeah, I know he's talking about, yeah.
Like, in the very second episode, sorry, or is he? No, in the, yeah, very second episode, kind of like, you know, when he says bye to Peter and walks home, and then, like, you see the kind of like, it doesn't do it in an overt way, but just kind of like it hints at kind of like what you would expect the struggles of like a black kid in New York to have, like being profiled by the police, going home into kind of like this poor neighborhood area and stuff like that. His family's kind of like, it's hinted at being struggling.
There was even a moment where Peter Parker did something in the first episode, and I think like Peter was speaking to him about something scientific.
Yeah.
And
he answered back, and he was kind of like taken aback. That. Because he didn't expect him to be a smart guy. Like, and it's just one of those things, like, it does it so well, these subtle little hints of, like, you know, like, almost profiling and just hinting at these wider aspects, these wider conversations without having to make this thing, which I think will lead me into the one small criticism I have, which isn't even on the show, but more of the voice cast of it. So I can't remember the guy's name who does play Peter Parker. When the show did come out initially, there was a quote of him talking about like how
Hudson Thames
like, yeah. There was a quote of him where he was talking about how he didn't want the show to be woke, and he doesn't like things that are woke, and it just shows...
sounds stupid, bro.
That's what I was going to say, because it sounds stupid, and it sounds like to me you don't know what the word woke means, because you look at the very first episode of Spider-Man, it is woke as fuck, like, and it's not even about kind of like the race swapping of certain characters and stuff like that, especially being kind of like a talking point for people nowadays. Yeah. Like, it's the ideas that you're putting forward, like Spider-Man is a political character from the get-go. Like, he's a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He's there for the little guy. He's there for the small people. He's there for everyone. And that in itself is inherently political. And to come out and say something along the lines of like, oh, I don't want this shit to be woke. Like, I just want him to be like Spider-Man. It feels like to me you don't understand the character, and quite frankly, you have the fucking privilege of playing such an iconic character.
You sound enraged.
Nah, I am.
Jason, one thing I will say is he looks like the kind of guy that would say that.
He does. He does look like the kind of guy who would say that. It's just like, look, we can all have our different opinions and whatnot, right? But like to come out and say something so wrong, it just shows to me that you do not understand the character that you're voicing.
You see that comedian, he made that joke, okay, and said he is black. Spider-Man is the most typical black person story of all time. Like his dad left.
Okay, where are we going?
We both left though.
Lives with his aunt and uncle gets shot by a criminal.
Where are we going?
Does anything to make peace. Obviously, you know, was him goes to the wrestling thing. Okay, blah blah. Yeah, hustles hard. Do you know what I'm saying? Right. you know what? Let me just stop there. Okay, cool. But
just to end Spider-Man on kind of like a more positive note, apart from kind of like some themes, dumb comments. Like I think the show as a whole, like thematically, visually, and performance-wise, is fantastic. And despite it, the opinions of others, Hudson Thames still puts in a fucking good performance as Peter Parker, as Spider-Man. Matt Murdock does make a cameo. So
in the last episodes that came out,
yeah.
He's on the cast.
He's in the cast. So is Vincent D'Onofrio as well. He's in the cast list as well.
Okay, okay. So, and I think the suits that they have him in are sick.
I think it's already been confirmed for a season 3. That's how much they're
okay. I mean, it's a good show. It's a great show, and like you know, despite its opinions from the from the people involved outside of it, if we're talking about the art itself, it is amazing. I would urge everyone to watch it.
All right. Jason, the reason you're here today, there's only one reason you're really here today. Question for you. Had you been watching the show before?
Do you know what? I haven't.
So you're like newly integrated?
Newly integrated.
Come on, man.
Oh, for sure. Man. Yes, sir.
Come on, kids.
That was clever.
Come on, man. We need to integrate Huss.
Yes.
At some point. What's the show we're talking about and why did you want to talk about it today? Okay. The floor is yours, pal.
Severance, man. That's the only show that 2025, I know it's going to be my fucking number one show. I'll say this for free right now. Severance, what is it about? So there's this company called Lumen where they have this new...
Sell it to Huss.
So it's a company called Lumen.
Turn of direction.
New concept of being severed. Severed is a procedure where you have an operation done where your work self and your kind of like, I guess, your outside self and regular self.
Sounds like a bit of me.
Is separate. So you don't know what's going on inside your work in the office that we are doing, and the person who is in the office does not know what you are doing on the outside. So it's almost like the idea of like having two split personalities where you have no idea what's going on.
One's having fun, one's just going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you say?
I said one's like having fun.
And this is where the show going to work. Is really interesting.
Because it's like, is he having fun? Because does he want like a purpose? And the guy at work, does he want like more freedom, you know,
he's along the right line.
You're pretty much along the right line.
I stopped you there.
I'm sure I know, man.
The reason I stopped you there, though, is because the person on the outside isn't necessarily having fun.
Yeah.
And that's the interesting part of the show, because the person on the outside, you could argue, is the person that decided to have the procedure done to change their life, right? To give them another opportunity.
Doing the same routine, etc. I hear it.
And this... which plays into like Dylan, who's my thinking process with that. And his sort of, where are you up to? You've seen season episode 3, right?
Episode 4.
So you've seen 3 when
But the thing is, what's the point of talking about it? Because now I'm watching it.
Okay, cool. No, no, no.
No, so, I didn't say anything.
No, we're not.
I'm in now.
No, we're not going to spoil it.
So,
because what I really wanted to talk about was A, fucking Ben Stiller. As soon as I finished the first fucking episode and I saw the director Ben Stiller, I was like, ain't no way my man done this. But he fucking did. Also being an executive producer, like, I was reading up, like, he put a lot of his own fucking money behind it to push the show to be where it is. And conceptually, right, because it tackles so many, like, especially at the time where it's come out now, where we are talking about work and, you know, a lot of companies are trying to reappeal working from home and other CEOs, shouts out to the, well, it's not shouts out, fuck the BrewDog CEO, where he's talking about blurring the lines between work-life balance, and there shouldn't be such a thing as work-life balance. And I think
I remember reading that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like it ties into this whole like wider narrative. I'm not sure if this was planned or anything. The fact that Severance kind of like touches on these whole ideas of like, oh, like my innie is constantly working, and you know that's not what you should want for your life. You shouldn't always be work, or you know, the one way or the other. I think the way it's shot as well is so beautiful. Like, I'm not sure if I'm using the word correctly, like the liminality of it, like each, so in the show, like when they're showing the office scenes, like within Lumen, when they're working, right, there are loads of hallways that go to wherever the fuck.
You're using the word correctly, mate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like wherever the fuck, and it's all like these very small hallways that feel like, and the way they kind of like shoot and pan the cameras and everything, right, like so you have scenes where Adam Scott is like running, right, and you never can quite scale how large this office is
because there's a state of transition and ambiguity.
Yeah, there you go.
You know that opening scene in season 2 took them 6 months to shoot.
6 months for one scene.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That's all I can say to it. Like, wow. Like, the way you can never quite scale, and like the mystery behind it. So it is, the mystery is within that show is like, because the people outside don't know what the people are doing inside, they're trying to figure out what they're doing. And same way as the people who are inside, they don't know what they're doing outside. So they're trying to figure this whole thing out. All right. So like this, like, constant mystery, the constant vagueness, the constant kind of like nothingness about, or like plays into this whole, the way it's is shot. And I think the writing by Dan Erickson,
yeah,
is absolutely so well done. I think Adam Scott, I don't think there is a more perfect person to play Mark.
Yes, Dan Erickson got that right. Dan Erickson, come on,
perfect,
locked in, man.
Yeah, like there's no there, and this is just to sell you one last time. Like Adam Scott, who has been on a lot of comedy shows such as Parks and Rec.
I know him.
Yeah, okay, there you go. So, like, you know how he is in like yeah. Parks and Rec.
That was that sharp.
No, fair enough.
So it was funny. He's probably the reason why I didn't watch it at first.
Yeah,
I was the exact same.
Yeah, no,
because exactly. I was like, oh, he's cool.
But man on the show, I don't
know. Exactly. Yeah. No, and I'm with you. But I remember, I feel like you and Manny were like big, big supporters of Severance at the time. And I was just like, okay, cool, I'll check it out one day because these niggas said it. But
they're actually making a film. It's called Mikey 17. Same concept.
No, it's not.
It's not the same concept, but it plays on the same idea of like having a person not. Like the two people,
I get what you're trying to say. It's not the first time that we've seen this premise or film or TV.
Yeah.
I think what the series does really well, alongside what you said in terms of the way the series is shot, is beautiful aesthetically, very purposeful in terms of framing and deciding which shots they want to use for particular scenes. Mm. Acting cast is superb because they're having to play, as you would have seen before, they play two different versions of a character. Mm. So, for example, Britt Lauer, incredible as Helly R in the series. So good. Milchek has been incredible in season 2 so far. There's so many interesting characters, and their purpose as to why they've done the severance procedure is probably one of the most intriguing aspects, because everyone has different reasons as to why they've severed.
Yeah.
And that's what drives the characters and sort of blurred lines between, well, you could argue they are one of the same people, but they're also very different at the same time because they're living different lives. And I think the biggest thing is we don't know the end game. That's the mystery behind the show. We don't know why Lumen are doing what they're doing by severing the minds of their employees. Season 2, we're a season and a half in, I still don't know what the end game is.
Yeah.
And that's why the show is so interesting, because people have got a Reddit server and they're like in there, trying to figure out. People are on TikTok doing theories upon theories. It takes me back to probably the last time I saw a show, not to this level, but like WandaVision theories, Game of Thrones theories. Mm. People are like trying to dissect and put the puzzles
together.
Yeah, they're like really involved.
And I think that's the most intriguing aspect, because I don't know where this ends. So
for sure, like, yeah, if there is anything to watch the show, like, it's one of the.
But you have to focus.
Yeah.
It's not a background thing.
Like, it's not a background thing. You have to be locked.
Phone down.
Because if you miss something, bro, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, okay, I'm in.
Good.
Phone down. I shall watch, my friends.
And to be fair, Apple TV are probably making themselves one of the strongest platforms when it comes to TV shows as it stands right now.
Bar HBO.
HBO always going to be the pinnacle.
Yeah.
But I think Apple TV, because they come up with original shows as well now, which is where, not to discredit HBO, loads of originals. So I'm not going to do the horse thing.
Oh, we're talking about.
But HBO also have IP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's not a bad thing. House of the Dragon love, Penguin love, give me more, Dune love, but I have to credit Apple for the premise of original shows, coming up with original ideas for their show. So, you know, Apple TV doing their thing, man.
Just want to also say that Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power Season 3 has been confirmed. So,
how do you feel?
Very excited, but horrific.
Fares,
well deserved. Can I also say, because obviously out of time, we didn't talk, you know, to talk about this, I got shagged by putting it in my top five. People were like, wait, people are too faithful. Six Emmy Award nominations, my brother. The reason for that.
Fair play.
Six.
I trust you on season two being good.
Season two was so good.
Season one, and I haven't.
Do you know, season two is so good, that from episode three to like six.
Okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
You're just like this.
Okay.
It's like you're locked in.
That's exactly how I feel with Severance in season two. Locked in for a minute.
So you took your stand.
Yeah.
Got a piece of shit.
No, I'm playing. Kind of. I'll jump back in.
Do you know the whole of season two is based around the intro of Lord of the Rings episode one. So the Fellowship of the Ring, right? So. Yeah. Lord of the Rings, have you seen it? Are you a Lord of the Rings fan?
I'm a Lord of the Rings fan, but I quit after season one.
Cool. So season two is based on the intro of Lord of the Rings one.
It's about the Nine Rings.
It's about the Nine Rings. Yeah. So it's literally that whole intro. It's like, all right, cool. We're just gonna tell you that story.
So it's got to the man, to the elves, to the dwarves. Blah, blah, blah.
And do you remember, like, he says, like, "Oh, Sauron, like, tricked them into making the rings, da da da, so he can have the ring power." It just tells that story, which is
cool. That's actually good.
That's a good story.
You know what?
Tell.
If we start with that, I'll be
okay. Like, it's crazy because you find out how Sauron tricked them.
Yeah, because I'd always wonder, like, the way they
because they never address it. Right, like in thing, yeah, because obviously no one was there, it was like 1,000 years ago, right?
And it starts off with kind of like I want to say the Shire,
yeah.
And even that, we get the origin, we get the origin of the Shire,
oh wow,
yeah,
the origin of the Shire,
yeah, which I didn't even think was a thing, bruv. Honestly, bro, season two is lit, bro. There's even like two characters that are main characters in season two. I ain't seen them for like two episodes.
Do you know what it is? My main problem was that I just didn't enjoy season. I haven't even finished season one yet. That's how much I didn't enjoy.
Finish it.
See, I think it drags. That's it. Season one drags.
It did. But they're building a world, bro. They're building a whole world.
So. But okay, do you know what?
No, anyways, I think we should. Yeah, it's like an hour and a half in now. You know what I'm saying? I think we should
wrap up.
Yeah,
we've
wrap up.
Done a lot of talking.
Yeah.
Just a quick one. Paradise, Disney Plus, really good series as well. I think it's now five episodes in. Would highly recommend.
Sterling
K. Brown's the lead.
K. Brown, yeah.
First lead role as well for him.
Is it?
Yeah.
First lead.
I want to watch it for sure.
You can wait to it. I mean, it's not. It's good. It's actually, I really like it. But you could wait for it to all come out and then.
Yeah.
If you're a binger like Bisola, then.
I am.
because she's got a channel called.
Yeah, no, it's a great segue. A
couple of integration puns.
Yeah, there you go.
It's really good. There's some shows coming out this in the week of the 20th. What's the day tomorrow? Tomorrow's the 17th, right?
Yeah.
1,000 Blows is out next week, and so is Zero Day on Netflix. So that's Robert De Niro on his first TV show. Angela Bassett's in it as well. It's a political thriller, and Jesse Plemons.
Damn.
So the week of the 17th, it's out on the Thursday, I believe.
That's on
Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah, Robert De Niro's first TV role. A 1,000 Blows is Stephen Graham.
Yes.
And Malachi Kirby.
You guys got to watch
it. No, we got to interview them at the red carpet, but I think guys went to
the set thing.
Set thing, yeah.
Which was cool. Malachi Kirby is a BAFTA winner. And he's in the series as well. It's a series, it's going to be on Disney Plus, and it's by the creator of Peaky Blinders.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Strong.
I'm intrigued.
Strong.
6 episodes set in the Victorian era. Sounds like it's going to be good.
6 episodes set in light.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I saw the trailer for that actually with Stephen Graham. Yeah, I saw the trailer for that. Yeah.
And Stephen Graham.
It looks good. It does look good.
Stephen Graham's the man as well.
Yeah. No, he's dope. I fuck with him.
Yeah. So yeah, man. If you've got, listen, we are your home for film and TV. So if you need recommendations, make sure to follow the Post Credit Scene Podcast, the 14HQ original. Lovers of film, TV and theatre. Make sure to check out the YouTube. Make sure you subscribe firstly and foremost. So you click the bell and you get to see all of our content as it's ready.
Yes,
make sure to leave a comment as well. We really appreciate when people comment. I think that's the best part of the experience as creators, when people comment and share their thoughts on your opinion. They can tell you you're chatting shit. They can tell you they like what you're saying. Mm. Either way, we like to hear from you guys. You can let us know what you're looking for from us as well. If you want us to diversify the content somewhat, tell us what you want us to watch. Give us some recommendations. That would be cool as well.
And we can let you know.
Okay. and lastly, follow the socials. We're on Instagram and TikTok, putting out some fire short content for you guys as well. And we are over and out. Shout out to Horse. Shout out to Jason. A really good episode. Kiz and us in the building as well. You know the vibes, man. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Lashana Lynch, and you are listening to the Post Credit Scene Podcast.